Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Mangiano. I'm joined today by Nadia Cater.
Hello.
Nadia, how are you?
Doing good, Mike. How are you?
Nadia, I want to throw some stuff at you.
Okay.
Terminator 2, The Empire Strikes Back, Adam's Family Values, Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2. What do all of these things have in common?
Did they all come out? No, wait, they couldn't have come out all at the same time. They're all sequels?
They're all sequels that are better than the original.
Okay, all right, I was half right.
We are here today, me and Nadia, to talk about Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2 from the year 1987, directed by Bruce Pittman, who went on to do a lot of like TV stuff, and Rob Oliver, who went on to write Prom Night 3, which is not very good, and some other stuff. Yeah, I'm a new disciple of this film. This film is a true cult classic. I first heard about this film from the documentary In Search of Darkness. When did you hear about this film?
It was probably from the same documentary. Or that's my possibility. It's actually because it's been a little bit. It's because I've watched it twice now. Uh-huh. It's either from the documentary or I just randomly found it on Shudder, and I was like, I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah,
that's like all I can't even remember, but it has to be because I've never heard of this movie before having Shudder, and probably not before watching that documentary.
Okay, so I heard of it from that documentary, but I kind of the VHS cover. As a child of the 80s and 90s, I have seen the cover, the VHS image of this movie probably a million times in my life. And it was one of those things. And if you've never seen it, it looks like lockers. It's drawn because it's the 80s. So it's art. It's not an image. It's not a photograph. Mm. And it's lockers. And then there's a like zombie prom queen like laying in a locker like it's a coffin, and then like in like cool bloody 80s font says Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2. And this movie is, I think, a blast.
Yeah, it's very, very weird. It's it's weird. It's very quirky. It's very imaginative. Scary scenes or supernatural scenes, whatever you want to call it, in a way that is very familiar with clearly getting inspiration from A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Maybe to a lesser extent, The Exorcist, more so than it's more supernatural than slasher. It's really not a slasher.
Right. The original Prom Night with Jamie Lee Curtis is a slasher. And it's like she also did Terror Train. After doing Halloween, she basically just like kept doing ripoffs. She would star in the ripoffs of her own movie. And I mean, some people like Prom Night 1. I think it's a pretty subpar slasher. There's barely any slashing in it. I think it thinks it's like a Hitchcockian thriller, but it's really like a slasher, but without. With barely any nudity or slashing, and you got Leslie Nielsen in it as the principal. But this is almost none of the characters from the first film are in this. This is a totally different story. It takes place at the same high school, And it shares one act. There's one actor who's in all four of the original Prom Night movies, but he plays a different character in every movie. And he's also the son of the producer.
Oh, okay. So he's just...
So they just throw him in there. The only other connective tissue is there's a line of dialogue that's said in all four movies, which is, it doesn't matter who you come with, it's who takes you home.
Okay, sure. I didn't watch any of the other Prom Night movies. There's no reason to. Number two is just a something on itself. Though part of the reason why I didn't watch Prom Night 1 is actually that was my form of revenge against you, Mike. Because, I don't know if you probably do not remember this, but ages ago, we were supposed to do an episode on an anthology horror movie. So I watched this awful movie. I can't even remember the name of it, but it was so painful to watch. It was so long. And then right after I finished, I get a text from you. It was like, hey, I'm not feeling this movie, so we're going to do something else. And you were like, I got like a half hour through and I couldn't do it anymore. And I was like, Mike, I just wasted so many hours of my life.
I'm so sorry. So- I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. You had to watch Prom Night 1, so it makes up for it.
Well, you know what it is for the listeners? There are times where like to talk about something on a podcast, it has to either be good, bad, or interesting. And every once in a while, I'd say maybe in the history, we're up to like episode 236 or something. In the history of Pop Culture Man Children, there's been maybe five or six times where an episode was started and it was like, there's nothing here. we can't do it. There was that one, which I don't remember the name of it. It was a Shudder original.
Yeah, so, you know, it wasn't going to be good anyway.
Clone High was another one. And I know people like Clone High, but I was just like, it's doing nothing for me. There was a few of them. But, no, I was happy to, you know, Prom Night 1 was like, okay, I've always known of it. I was like, okay, let me, I just wanted to see it to see it. But really, the takeaway is Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2. It's really, it should be its own thing. And there is lore around the movie that it was supposed to be its own film. And then last minute, they tried to make it a sequel, which I don't know if I totally believe, because they say this is on IMDb trivia. And it says that the original title of it was The Haunting of Hamilton High. But the problem is Hamilton High was the high school from the first Prom Night. And it's the same producer as the first Prom Night. So I think there was always supposed to be some connection. Maybe it wasn't a sequel. Maybe it was like, I don't know, in the same universe or just a nod to the earlier film. I do think it probably would be more fondly remembered if it weren't called Prom Night 2. It is, you said The Exorcist before, it is a possession story. It's a little bit of, you know what? I've watched it thrice now.
Thrice?
Yeah. The second time. Yeah. The second time I saw it, I realized there are two films that it reminds me a lot of. Mm-hmm. The first is, and this is a film we've talked about before, A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, which is also a possession story, and also a sort of queer iconic movie. And this is a queer iconic movie. Mary Lou Maloney is an iconic character. And the second movie that this reminds me of is Fire Walk With Me, the Twin Peaks movie.
Oh, interesting.
Which came out later. So did David Lynch steal from Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2? I'm going to go ahead and say yes. Because both of those films are about like white picket fence suburbia, but just underneath the sort of boring facade of white middle class is like incest and horrible shit.
Right. Though, I mean, I know you're kind of being a little jokey. I can argue that it's just, you know, it's at that time, right? It came out in the 80s. Fire Walk With Me, if we look at the original, the movie came out in the mid-90s, but the series came from 1990, pretty close to the 80s, right?
Yeah.
So that's like that Reagan era kind of really big conservative movement. So, of course, they're going to be like, it's going to be topical to undermine that.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, maybe David Lynch did watch this, but we have no way to, there's no way to tell. And there never will be any evidence whether or not he did. But, you know, sorry, kicking my cat out. So We really, there's no way to tell. I gotta say, though, I'm kind of like on the fence about Mary Lou being queer coded.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to get into that a little later or now.
You need to bring it up now. Yeah.
Okay. So the reason why Mary Lou is queer coded is because when she possesses the lead character, Vicky, she makes Vicky, or like, you know, Mary Lou as Vicky, goes into the gym shower while her friend is in there after they have an argument.
Yeah.
About Mary, you know, Vicky's rapidly changing behavior. And that's when Vicky tries to kiss her. And at first she kind of laughs about it, like it's almost like a joke, but then she pushes herself on this friend. And the friend immediately freaks out and runs out, and she's running away from Mary Lou, right?
Right.
That is the only time anything about Mary Lou is remotely queer.
Okay, you're right.
The thing is, though, I don't know if it's a sexual thing, because it could go one way. It could go like maybe she is attracted to her friend, but we don't see that anywhere else. We never see Mary Lou show any interest in women. She's really interested in sex, which we get. And when she's in the beginning of the movie and she's confessing to the priest, she's talking about how much she loves, you know, playing with boys, right? Or the boys at school. And then, you know, throughout the rest of the movie, outside of that scene, there's nothing queer about her. Maybe in the sense, if we look at queer as kind of not so much as obviously, you know, a same-sex attraction, but if we're talking about queerness as kind of like agency, or queerness as
transgressive. Yeah.
Which Mary Lou is the epitome of transgressive. Everything she does is very fuck you, right? That's like her whole aesthetic. So there could be attraction, but it seemed more like she was playing with the friend.
I think I would agree with you. That's really, she's very explicitly into men and having sex with men. But there's really only that scene where she is, where, like you said, you could almost read it not as sexual, but as like just sort of playing with her prey. You know what I mean? Just playing with her victim. But there was the website Birth Movies Death. Lee Monson in 2019 wrote a little essay about it. And she makes the point where she says, like, think about like how often villainy, and this is complicated, but think about how often villainy was queer coded. Whether it be like Norman Bates or Ursula from The Little Mermaid. So I think you're right in an explicit way. I mean, that's the only scene, that locker room scene is the only scene wherein we could infer that Mary Lou Maloney is bisexual. But I think in a sort of broader figurative sense, there is something queer about her. Because I think what's interesting about the movie is the character is, and we'll get into the story in a minute. The character sort of main, she's the antagonist, but really her antagonists are two men that both used to date her, and one is the school principal and one is a priest. So they represent this sort of patriarchal power, and they're kind of and one of them is responsible for her death. So they're kind of like trying to repress her. I mean, when you look at Mary Lou, she's really out for revenge in this film, and she fucking deserves revenge. You know, there's a scene where she has fully possessed Vicky, who's our like goody two shoes girl who gets possessed. And she goes to the principal's office and like sits in his lap, and she says something like, you know, I was so young. I could have been anything. I could have done anything, and you took it away from me. And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, Mary Lou. Like, fucking kill Michael Ironside. Michael Ironside is the principal, which one thing about this series, and I've only seen the first three, it's always good. The principal's always good. Michael Ironside is like this weird, like ex-nerd current principal. Is such a weird, it's just so weird. It's really fun.
I didn't really know Michael Ironside's work that well. I just kind of took it as, oh, weird, it's a balding teenager.
He's like a fully grown teenager, and then like 20 years later, he's another completely different, fully grown man. It's like Ted Mosby in How I Met Your Mother. Like, how are you? You're already a man. How do you become Bob Saget?
Right. It's weird because they look the same age too, or like close in the same age. It's like, so I'm like, okay, so you just aged weirdly, right? We're gonna accept this as a character. It's like you just looked 40 when you were 16 and then continued to look 40 well into your 40s.
Right.
It's bizarre.
But well, there's a great scene where it begins in a flashback of 1957, where you see young guy and he's in the bathroom and Mary Lou has just like cuckolded him in front of the whole school. And the principal from the 50s like talks to him. And it's like they share a weird moment where it's like, this is where he decides he's going to be a principal.
Yeah, right before he murders. Right before
he murders her with, he tries to throw, I guess let's do a little bit of a summary. Unless you were, yeah. Sorry, you were finishing a point. Or you were just saying you don't know Michael Ironside.
Yeah, I just didn't know much about him. I was just like,
Scanners?
He kind of looks like, I don't know, Jack Nicholson. That's all I
got. He's intense. He's, I'm trying to think. He's in a lot of 80s and 90s stuff. He, in the David Cronenberg movie Scanners, he plays the main like villain and he can blow people up with his mind.
Oh, yeah.
If you've ever seen the cover of Scanners, it's Michael Ironside looking crazy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I remember that now. Okay. And, oh, all right. So, you know, using my phone, he was in Total Recall, some part. Okay. Yeah. It's like he was familiar, but I was like, I wasn't sure where I've seen him before. But yeah. He definitely has this very villainous face. So.
Yeah, he usually plays a more heavy character than in this. In this, he's kind of like a nerd, although he is a bad guy.
But what makes him nerdy outside of like he didn't get to second base with Mary Lou? Because that's what he says when he walks in on her kissing this other guy. He's like, we never got this far. And I'm like, wait, because they were making out and she was sitting on this guy's lap.
And right? She was rubbing his dick. She says, the thing I like about you is your big dick.
Right.
And she says the thing she likes about the other guy is that he's rich.
Okay. So, but did he see that? Because
I think we don't know. So. Well, no, remember this is so crazy. She's such an unhinged character. She's the rest of the movie doesn't live up to the character and the performance. Mary Lou is played by Lisa Strange, who didn't do much else. She's actually not even in part three. And part three is a Mary Lou story, but someone else plays her.
Oh,
she is so good as Mary Lou. And they're at the prom. It's 1957. He gave her some like ring and she's like, oh, I love the ring. Can you go get me some punch? While this sucker goes to get her punch, she goes backstage and hooks up with another guy and like he fingers her because he goes to push his hand at her boyfriend like this is as close as you'll get, implying that he fingered her. And he's
right.
And he goes, we've been pinned for a year. We've never gone that far. It's so good. And what's funny is, you know, how he finds out is he's like, has anyone seen Mary Lou? And then some other kid is like, oh, she's backstage with Bud. When did you two break up? And he's like, we didn't break up. And he's like, uh-oh, Bud strikes again. And comically, Bud becomes a priest.
Which, yeah, I didn't see that coming. It didn't seem like he really, I don't know. It's like, why did Bud become a priest? Because he wasn't the guy with the smoke bomb, stink bomb, right? But that he was someone else.
Kill her. I think he feels some. All right. So, everybody's upset. That whole scene happens. They say prom queen is Mary Lou. She goes up. It's her moment. She's loving it. She's loving the attention. And up on the rafters, on the stage, her boyfriend, the one who's just been sort of jilted, he has a smoke bomb, and he's just trying to like, I don't know what he's trying to do. He's just trying to fuck with her. It looks like an Acme bomb from like a Looney Tunes cartoon. It's gigantic. It sets her dress on fire and she burns to death in front of the whole school. And Bud, the 1957 stud, 1987 priest, he like tries to save her, but he can't. And then he's like, I guess he feels some guilt over it or something. I don't know.
Well, from the look of it, it actually took me a little bit to realize that it was the same character.
Right.
And the young guy. Because he runs up to stage with like a coat or something.
Right.
And then he just stands there and just watches in shock as this woman burns to death. So I guess you have to make that leap yourself that he feels guilty because he never shows it. It's just the shock of standing there watching someone on fire. So it really wasn't, I mean, he wasn't necessarily to blame. I mean, at most, I guess it could be negligent or just.
Well, maybe he feels guilty because if he weren't hooking up with his friend's girlfriend, maybe his friend wouldn't have murdered her. I mean, I'm not defending this insane logic, but it's. You know, it takes all the agency away from her, which is what they want to do. All they are trying to do. Mary Lou is transgressive. Let's start with the opening scene. The opening scene, you see a church. She goes in. And by the way, this makes no narrative sense. This doesn't even make sense, like why she would do it, but it's just a great opening. We see a church. She goes into the confessional. She's like, Father, I have so many sins to confess. And he's like, what is it, my child? And she's like, I have sexual relations with boys, many boys. And she's like, takes out her lipstick while she's doing this. And I do all this terrible shit and blah, blah, blah. And the priest is like, wow, that's really horrible. You have a lot to repent for. And then she goes, but one more thing, Father, I loved every minute of it. And then you see on her side of the confessional in lipstick, she wrote, for a good time, call Mary Lou Maloney. And that's, she just did that before the prom, just as a goof. I should say, and also there's a great cut. You see her face in the confessional and she blows a kiss at the priest and you hear womp bam aloo mom womp bamboo, and then it cuts to her dancing to Tutti Frutti at the prom, having a great old time. And it's like, yes, yes, I love this character.
Oh yeah, she's so unrepentant. And the priest is just so shocked.
Yeah.
She was having a great life before she burned to death in front of the whole school.
Yeah. I mean, it's supposed to be 1957. She's gorgeous. She's manipulative. She's drinking. She's fucking. She's dating one guy for the money. She's dating the other guy for his dick. She's the prom queen. She's living it up. She's enjoying life and nothing's going to stop her. And that's what makes the character so interesting. Like, this is our villain. This character is great.
You're right. It's just really interesting that it starts off with a tragedy, too. So it's like, not only is she unrepentant, but she dies in a really horrible way. Because it's like, it's not, nothing is really her fault, right? I mean, yeah, maybe she could have been a little more sensitive to her boyfriend's, you know, like, feelings or whatever. Mm. But that definitely did not warrant being burned to death. So that's interesting as a villain too, is like, I mean, I don't know if the movie would necessarily code it as tragic. It's just something, that's how she dies, but
it's what makes her into a monster, you know. It's right. it follows what a lot of these movies do, which is like, even though it's not a slasher, it kind of follows the slasher formula of beginning with some sort of transgression in the past that will come to fruition in the future.
Hmm.
The first prom night begins that way. And so it is like Halloween thing. I mean, a lot of movies of that time did. Yeah. So then we're in the 80s and we're with Vicky, played by Wendy Lyon. I think she's good. She's like a goody good girl. She won't even put sugar in her coffee. Her mother's basically the mother from from Carrie. She's like crazy religious.
Oh, okay. There it is. Yeah. Cause I was trying to figure, I was like, I feel like this seems familiar.
Yeah.
And it's weird that she's so super religious cause her husband doesn't seem that way.
Right. Well, then there's the other weird thing with the husband is later on when, and this is skipping ahead, but later on when Vicky is fully possessed by Mary Lou, Mary Lou like kisses the father. And the father, like, doesn't fight back really at all. And that's what made me go, wow, this is like Firewalk with Me.
I was wondering about that because I don't know if I'm doing, like, a leap here.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But the mother was just so, had so much hatred and just, like, towards her daughter being able to do really anything. And I was wondering if it's maybe because she always sensed that her daughter is like attractive.
Or maybe the father, she senses that the father has something.
That's what I was wondering. Him. Yeah, because the way she treats her daughter is so bizarre. Like, it's bizarrely strict, like the Carrie, which wasn't one of the movies that we that we mentioned as this is kind of taking from, but it's definitely a strong, I mean, it happened, you know, horrible thing happens at prom, revenge taking prom later at the movie. Crazy religious mom, shower scene, right?
Yeah.
So much of that's from Carrie. Now that I didn't even put that together until just now. Yeah, but I was wondering, but then again, that could just be me reaching, because like, why? It could be that she sensed the father was a little too lenient, maybe possibly attracted to his daughter, or it could just be we're going to write this character because we liked it from Carrie and it worked and we're going to do this.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, it could also be us. It could be our interpretation of the actor who plays the dad, because it just feels like he doesn't fight back very much to his own daughter kissing him. It seems like he's into it. It's weird. It's weird. And also, Vicky's like weirdly infantilized. Like in her room, it's like a little girl's room. She's got like a big like rocking horse that looks like a giant horse from like a carousel.
Yeah, like they took it off the carousel and put it in her room.
Yeah, it's like it's very weird. There's a lot of oddness in this movie. It's a lot of surrealism in this movie too.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed, but later on, the rocking horse thing comes back.
Yeah.
And when it's possessed and when it's going crazy and weird and creepy.
Yeah.
In the back, Vicky has a print of Guernica on the wall.
I don't even know what that is. Tell me, explain that to me.
Okay. So Pablo Picasso's Guernica is this cubist painting depicting a war. I wish I could, like, I think it's a Spanish, I could be wrong, like some war, and it's just chaos. It's just all these people, cubist people, like screaming and being stretched out as they're being attacked. And I was like, I don't know, is this a coincidence? Does this have to anything to do with this movie? Because it was just very weird. It was weird for seven teenager's room.
It doesn't. It also doesn't fit the rest of her room's aesthetic, which is all like very like baby doll, Barbie.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, why is this here? Was it someone just found it in the prop department and just put it on her wall? Did they want us to think about chaos and uncertainty in the same way? I don't know. There's this movie gives us more questions than answers. And I kind of like, that's what I like about this movie.
Yeah.
It seems good. It's just so strange. It's just very, very strange and throws back to other horror movies in different ways.
Right. Yeah. It's in no way a perfect film. I think, I actually think that if it were like 5% more satirical, it would work better. I think the same screenplay with a more sort of satirical director might have made a better film, because there is a lot of sort of not ha-ha comedy, but a lot of like sort of latent satirical stuff in there. Like, you know, like the scene between the principal and the priest where they're like talking, like it's like this scene's ridiculous. Like what's going on here is ridiculous. And to her credit, the actress who's playing Mary Lou, she's playing it very funny.
Oh yeah, she's like definitely, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to push it to that level.
So let's talk about like the weird, the dark world, because one of the really cool things visually about this film is while Vicky is beginning to sort of be possessed, she keeps slipping into this like dark world, which actually reminded me a lot of the Upside Down from Stranger Things. Because it's like a mirror world. It look, you know, like it happens usually when she's at school, and like at one point she's in the cafeteria and there's like a kindly looking old cafeteria worker, but then she turns around and this is very David Lynch too. Everything's dark. Everybody's like a zombie and they're all moving kind of like super slow. There's cockroaches everywhere. Suddenly the lunch lady has like really like trashy makeup. And like she's like giving her like this gross soup, and then she sees her dead friend's face in the soup, and it's like, and another time she's in the hallway, and then the hallway turns into this dark world, and outside the window there's like this neon blue, which reminds me a lot of like Italian giallo films, like those bright colors, and then there's some like zombie greaser who's like, "I love you, Mary Lou," and basically like starts like forcing himself on Vicky. It's all super surreal.
I mean, this movie came out way before Stranger Things. So I took it as like the first A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
When the main character like falls asleep during detention or something.
Yes.
And then everything is just totally different, like immediately. You don't even see her fall asleep. It just kind of like everything's different. Like the weird world, and then she's seeing like the body bags and stuff like that.
Yeah. No.
It was good. It's good. It's still, I really actually like that kind of terror because it changes so fast. There's no transition point. There's no indication that she's fallen asleep or is having some sort of episode. It just,
right.
And the greaser, I actually wrote that. I was like, who is this guy?
Right.
Cause it doesn't look like anyone. And he doesn't. And you say that like, he looked like a zombie. To me, he just looked like another dude, like just any guy, which okay. That was weird. More so like even the cafeteria people looked kind of zombie-ish. But not the guy in the hallway.
Okay. Yeah.
He's calling her Mary Lou, which I mean, Vicky barely knows who Mary Lou is at this point. So like that in itself is bizarre. What's really weird, I know we jumped to like the dark world and it happened. Like that's like the transition period. Like every time Vicky goes into this dark quote, you know, whatever, they don't call it anything in the movie. We're just calling it, giving it something.
Yeah.
Dark world. That's like slowly Mary Lou is like tightening her hold on her until she fully like takes her over. And then she's making Vicky act like Mary Lou instead of Vicky feeling like she's losing her mind. Cause that's all people are seeing is like Vicky being okay 1 minute and then freaking out and everything, nothing's changed.
Yeah. It's interesting because if you look at like The Exorcist, right? We don't see the possession happening from the little girl's point of view, right? But in this film, it's like, what is she psychologically going through as she is becoming possessed? And again, this goes a little bit to like A Nightmare on Elm Street too. Like a little by little, it's not like there's a split second where all of a sudden she's acting like Mary Lou. It's like she's getting infected by Mary Lou because, you know, right away, like she starts using sugar in her coffee. So, you know, oh, there's something up. And then she starts like doing her makeup a little bit more, but she's still Vicky, but she's just being a little bit more like Mary Lou. And there's actually a nice, interesting like moment where, and this is where the ideology of the film gets like really interesting to read, because it's like there's a point where it feels like the film is saying Vicky can use a little Mary Lou. Vicky's so uptight, Vicky's so crushed under her mother's very conservative weight, maybe a little bit of Mary Lou would be liberating for Vicky. It's a weird, it's an interesting, like the middle is kind of an interesting thing where, like, you know, we haven't talked about her friend yet, but she has a friend who Mary Lou kills, and it looks like a suicide. And the bully girl says something about the suicide, and Vicky, in a very un-Vicky way, is like, "Fuck you, you bitch!" And everyone's like, "Whoa, look at Vicky!" And it's like,
Vicky.
Yeah, because that was Mary Lou coming out in Vicky, or at least like the spirit of Mary Lou standing up for herself. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I know we're jumping around, which is totally fine.
That's fine.
But can we backtrack to just like when her friend is killed, which is very bizarre and actually doesn't fit in with the rest of the killing. It's fun.
Yeah.
I really like it, but it doesn't, because every instance of Mary Lou killing someone after the first kill, it's like there's a revenge aspect or something there. Right. Or something like her taking agency. Whereas this one, it's the friend reveals to Vicky that she's pregnant, and the father stopped returning her phone calls. Like that's the context. Right. So she's staying late in the art room, and it's after she has this breakdown and telling Vicky what happened. She's by herself.
Right. She's pregnant, and which is actually, I think, a pretty tender scene for this movie.
Yeah, it's so they have that moment, then she's by herself, she's in the art room, she's working on something. Off screen, you hear a janitor or someone talk to the friend and say, "I'm closing up soon, just lock up when you're gone," right? So we can also assume that she does this a lot,
right?
Just from that,
like,
one line.
Artie friend, she's like an artist.
Right. She's an artist, and she's also like very 80s more so than a lot of the other characters. Like, she has really big hair.
Yeah,
she's wearing a bunch of mismatched patterns, right? She's very of her time. She's wild. She had sex. And what keeps happening in this movie is that there's some costume trunk in the basement that keeps opening, and we're supposed to like connect that to Mary Lou's in this trunk or her spirit or something.
In the trunk is Mary Lou's cape and tiara that she won as the queen. So those, I guess she's inside of those, I guess.
Which is weird because she didn't even wear the cape. And I don't remember if she wore the crown. Did she wear the crown? Because if she was on fire and no one put it out, wouldn't the crown melted?
Right. She does wear the crown because the girl who, like, after she wins, the girl's trying to, she's like fussing with the cape. And she says, like, forget the cape, bonehead. Just give me the crown.
Which is amazing. That was funny. So anyway, the friend finds the cape and the tiara, and she's looking at the tiara and thinking, I'm going to do something with it, right? Because she's already...
She takes a jewel off of it, which I think is what pisses off Mary Lou.
Well, oh, yeah. That's the only connection, is like she's messing with Mary Lou's crown. Yeah. So Mary Lou just gets this wind going in this room and is knocking papers around, and a paper cutter. And this paper cutter is just moving by itself up and down. And it makes you think that Mary Lou is going to cut this woman's head off.
No, but it psychs you out.
It psychs you out. So like the art friend is wearing the cape, and Mary Lou chokes her with the cape and actually hangs her, which I'll get to that in a second. So she hangs her.
Right. Which is, again, like a Nightmare on Elm Street. That's like the way the kid in the jail cell, when Freddy hangs the kid in the jail cell, right?
Oh, yeah. With the bed sheets.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then throws the body out the window. So my question in my notes here was, if there was an autopsy, how would this woman asphyxiate and then throw herself out a window?
Right. Just, she should have just left her hanging.
Yeah, because you can see before she dies, there's blood on the tie on the cape. So that means that she choked, right? She choked and her body weight hung her. So then they could, if they did an autopsy, couldn't they see, or even if they didn't do an autopsy, they just found the body on the school lawn, wouldn't they think that was weird that she had?
It makes no sense. I mean, what does the autopsy say? Death by hanging herself and then throwing herself out a window 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, because she flies out the window like she was launched. It's absolutely great. It's so much fun. But it doesn't make sense to the rest of the movie. That kind of violence against that girl who has nothing to do with Mary Lou, other than she took some cheap costume jewelry which it looks like glass. It's cheap and plastic off a crown. Like, okay.
Yeah. And you know, the article that I was just referring to before, actually makes the point as like, why, if this girl is pregnant, so she had sex with a guy she liked, why would Mary Lou have a problem with this girl? This girl represents Mary Lou's point of view of how to live her life.
Right.
It's also the only death like that, because every other death is Vicky killing the person possessed by Mary Lou. This is the cape, like Doctor Strange, the cape is possessed by Mary Lou, and that kills her. It kind of, you're right. It's a fun scene. It's visually appealing. It doesn't totally make sense. I mean, everything with the trunk, it all doesn't track that well. Like, what are the rules of Mary Lou or whatever? I don't know. Who knows?
There's no rules. And also, once the cape and the tiara are out of the trunk, why would the trunk still be moving and opening by itself? And
right.
I was thinking, like, okay, maybe if I was writing this movie, maybe if I was a movie writer, I would make it like one of the girls got Mary Lou's locker. And then they found a false bottom and her shit was right. Because then at the very least, that would have some sort of connection. Mary Lou has nothing to do with the costume trunk. As far as we know, she doesn't do theater.
Right. No, she doesn't. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's Yeah, it doesn't totally make sense. And then in the end, she like goes back into the trunk. And then like when Vicky is like set free, Vicky comes out of the trunk as herself, like she's birthed out of the trunk. It's very
Yeah, it's weird. Like a magic trick, right?
You know what's another really interesting scene though that makes you kind of root for Mary Lou? Vicky is now fully possessed by Mary Lou, and they're in science class, and the science teacher comes over, and while no one's looking, he like touches Vicky's ass. He like sexually assaults her, and then using Mary Lou magic, she makes like the Bunsen burner like explode and burn his dick. And it's like, that's an interesting moment, because very simply, there's somebody there who's bad, who you have to think, if he did that to Vicky, would Vicky have fought back? Maybe not. Maybe she would have just like accepted it, sadly. And she punishes this guy by basically like castrating him. It's really interesting because it's like a rooting for Mary Lou moment.
It's great. Though I do wonder if he was actually killed or he was just maimed in some way. Because he never comes back. He's never mentioned
it. I think he just burned his dick. I think his dick is burned now.
Did you notice that he had the same hairdo as that poster of Einstein that the geeky kid has in his computer room later in the movie? Which makes me think that this science teacher is so arrogant. He probably thinks he's as genius as Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why he kind of took it. Again, like I'm doing this thing where I'm trying to make sense of it myself. Maybe I'm reaching, but it just seemed like such a bizarre haircut for anyone to have.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the thing with a film like this, right? Like, there's so much that we could read into it, and I think there's a lot of value in that. And I don't know. See, that's I kind of wanted to, like, end with this, but we could kind of talk about it now. This film is a little bit hard to read because it's not clear what the film is trying to say. It's not clear if the film is trying to say something but is just unsuccessful, or if it's confused in what it's trying to say. It's not clear that maybe critics read, and I'm fine with this, you know, I say this all the time on the show, I'm a post-structuralist. Like, if you read something into a film, that's valid. But there are things that happen in the film, like the scene with the science teacher, that makes me think, no, there is somewhere in there is an author who is trying to say something transgressive, but they're just not getting it all the way out. It's like confused as to what it's trying to say.
I think this movie could have done with maybe one more rewrite. When I think of this movie, I think of something that has a really incredible visuals and a really powerful and full agency female villain, but the writing and a lot of the acting is just not up to the stuff of the visuals.
Yeah, I agree.
I would also agree with what you said earlier, is that if this was remade, I think like with just like another rewrite, maybe set, you have to of course change the times a little bit, but I think this would be an excellent movie. I think this is supernatural villainy is really, would be really nice to see again.
Yeah, like that. Yeah.
Especially as now, and you know, at this time of recording, we're getting to a point where we're definitely seeing a turn. There's probably Roe v. Wade's going to be overturned. We're in a weird place.
Yeah.
Things feel like they're in a very conservative, confusing kind of feeling. So to have a movie like this would probably be really great right now.
Yeah.
Like right this
moment. Yeah, sure. I think as imperfect as it is, I think that this film deserves a real release. There's currently only really two places to watch this film. You can watch it either on Shudder, or you can watch it with advertisements on Amazon Prime. But they're both the same copy, and it's a really, really shitty rip that I think is from a VHS. I mean, the fact that this film has no version of, there's no way to watch this film that isn't just like third generation, like, it's really a shame. I don't know if it was ever on DVD or why that DVD is not the rip that we see streaming, but it deserves, I don't know, it deserves a 4K release. It deserves really to be cleaned up and given a good release, because the fact that like all you could find of this movie is like just like, it feels like a shitty bootleg, the version that's on Shudder. And it's like, if that's what's on Shudder, that's as good as it gets. it's sort of it sucks. It sucks.
Yeah, I agree. I think though, if there is any interest in this movie now, it's because of Shudder, though.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
because I think the reason why it is on Amazon is because of Shudder, because beforehand it wasn't. And Shudder, and you know, Shudder is a real mixed bag. We've talked about this before. It's like we want it to be better, but it's not quite there yet. But right now it's really giving you a lot of horror that you just don't really get. And Mary Lou is one of the Prom Night 2 is one of those movies that we'd probably never even heard of if it wasn't for Shudder collecting bargain bin like VHSs and then putting them on streaming. I think Shudder's the closest we can get right now to the horror section of Blockbuster in 1980.
Yeah, you're right. And going to Shudder is like I don't know what it's like playing roulette or something. Like I find like of all their like hidden gems, 3 out of 4 are terrible, and then the fourth one will be great, and you're like, holy shit, why have I not seen this before? This is incredible.
I absolutely agree with you. Though I gotta say their documentary stuff has been getting better.
Did you see the Alien one? It's called Memory. It's like a deep critical reading of the first Alien movie. It's really good.
Oh, I'm gonna write this down.
It's Memory. Yeah, it's really cool. Was it like folk story one that was like folk 4 hours?
Yeah, but that one kind of stunk. Shudder does two kinds of documentaries generally. It's either a deep dive into something, like either a specific topic or type of movie or like type of subgenre for hours and hours, and it's like super interesting. They go behind the scenes. They find people that are like in production if they could. They find fans.
Yeah.
Right. It's that, and then they have more like survey, which is just like, oh, at this time in 1963, these kinds of movies came out, and maybe we'll say one or two things about these movies and then list a bunch of other ones.
Yeah.
And I think the folk horror one is just survey. It's just like, oh yeah, this is this thing at this time, and then this is the thing at this time. And I'm like, I want to know more about these movies.
Yeah.
Because I don't know anything about folk horror. And I could not finish it. It
took its time. It took too much time. It could have been much tighter, and I would have got a lot out of it. By the way, you can watch the In Search of Darkness movies on Shudder. And the director of In Search of Darkness, David Weiner, has been on PCMC twice. So you can listen to me talking to him about these things. Let's talk about something that I think is really wild and brave. The main character, Vicky, played by Wendy Lyon, when she's fully possessed by Mary Lou, in that locker scene we were talking about before, she's fully nude, like a lot. And apparently they were like, do you want to wear a towel? And she's like, I'll just go fully nude.
That's wild.
What do you think of that? It's almost, what do you think of it?
Okay, so when I was watching it, when I watched that for the first time, I was like, wow, she's either, she did it herself, or the production team made her do it. And it, she doesn't, I don't like saying this, but it's like, she doesn't have like a tradition, what we call at the time, like a traditionally attractive
body. She looks like a real person.
Yeah, I wrote in my notes, it's like, wow, her thighs are touching. I don't know, like I've never seen that.
Right. That's really interesting. I think that's totally valid to say, because it's a brave choice for her to just be like, yeah, I'm going to be totally nude and not be living up to whatever bullshit standards.
Yeah. I also think it's totally a Mary Lou move too. Like Mary Lou would hunt someone down completely naked to fuck with them. Like it fits the character, and it was a good choice. Though I gotta say that scene itself is the motivation's a little questioning, because it's like, why did she? So, you know, she sexually harassed Vicky's friend.
Yeah.
And Vicky's friend's running from her. Vicky's friend hides in a locker, and then Mary Lou scrunches all the lockers together.
I love that death, though.
That was cool. Awesome death. Yeah, that was, it is like, again, another like kind of reminiscent of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
So it's great. But the question is why does she do that? Because before that scene happens, the only kind of possibility is that the friend pushes Mary Lou's buttons and says, "You're acting really weird. I don't know what's going on with you."
He breaks her radio.
Breaks her.
And there she has to die.
Yeah, but she like harasses, like, it's so, it's just weird because the only thing, like, the vague threat really was, "I'm gonna tell your boyfriend that you're acting weird and we're gonna figure out what's wrong with you."
Yeah, no, you're right. It doesn't totally, and the character who dies in the locker, as cool as that death is, that's not like a huge character either. So it's kind of like this character is kind of just thrown in there and then dies. It's a very cool death. And I guess it gets nudity in the film, and people always, you know, especially in the 80s horror movies, you want to put in nudity. So, I mean, I guess that's it. But no, you're right. It doesn't totally, you kind of, it's not a revenge killing. So it's like, why would Mary Lou kill her? But you know, what I think is really interesting about that scene is, like, thinking about, like, the male gaze. Like, obviously there's a male gaze happening because she's on screen and we're watching her nude. But there's nothing demure about her. Like, the way that she is stalking her prey, the way that she is being aggressive, it's almost like it's like looking us right in the, it's like the scene in Rear Window where Jimmy Stewart is watching across the way. And he sees Raymond Burr, the killer, and then Raymond Burr looks right at the camera, right at Jimmy Stewart and us, the audience, and it's like shocks you. It's almost like that. It's like, yeah, you're looking at me, but I'm the killer. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure on the day there was nothing transgressive in their minds. They were like, okay, we got two naked girls. They're going to kiss in a shower. Let's do this. And I'm reading it as like this super transgressive thing, but either way, I think it works.
No, it definitely works. Like we said, it's like, it's really amazing scene. It is a little like frightening. She's definitely, you know, stalking her prey and gets her prey, but it also doesn't narratively totally make sense. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. It's just, it's fun. Like, this movie is fun. We are, you know, critical kind of people. So that's why we're dissecting everything.
Yeah. I think this is an interesting, I mean, I think even just for like a horror fan, it's worth a view. We haven't talked about it yet, but I think the best effect in the movie is the blackboard.
Oh yeah. That was definitely a throwback, right? I don't know if the director or the writer saw Cocteau's Blood of a Poet, but that's what it reminded me of. Have you seen that?
I've seen his Beauty and the Beast, but I've never seen Blood of a Poet.
So I can't remember if he did this in Beauty and the Beast, but basically it's a very experimental film about an artist who jumps into the mirror and is in this like kind of mirror world with some of his artwork and some weird stuff happening. It makes no sense. It's not meant to, right?
Sure.
But when he jumps into the mirror, he's actually jumping into a pool. Right. So that's exactly what happens here, is that Vicky goes into the blackboard, but it's water. It's dyed water. And she's like, you know, getting sucked in and be splashing around, and it's all terrifying.
Yeah.
But
it's amazing. And even like there's like chalk words on the board. So they like, when she's in it, it's clearly water when she's in it. But there's like you see the words floating around, the letters floating around, like she's like in the. It's such a. It really is such a cool effect.
And then when she jumps out,
yeah, like,
Vicky Mary Lou, the letters stop moving. Like they move and they stop, and they stop in different positions, and they're not words anymore.
Right.
Than they were in the beginning, and you're like, oh wow, that's. That's like a good attention to detail.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, of course, like that's part of that like dark world. And then I guess another cool effect is at the end, it's the Vicky wins prom queen. And the principal now, as a sort of like echo of what he did when he was younger, he shoots Vicky. But Mary Lou then like comes out of Vicky. It's a little bit like there's a similar scene like that in the Italian film Demons. You ever see Demons? It's like, it's, I think it's Lucerno Bava. It's like in a movie, they're in a movie theater and the demons come off the screen and like possess all the people in the theater. And there's this one scene where like this woman, like she like crouches over, but like through her back, a demon just like a full size demon like comes out of her back. It's a little bit like that. It's a very cool effect. It's very gross. And at that point, Mary Lou is like all burnt. Like, depending on how much she wants to freak you out, she'll either look like her normal self or super burnt. And she's all burnt in that scene. That's a really cool, like, gnarly scene. There's also a really, I think, a good jump scare where Vicky's boyfriend is, like, running away from Mary Lou after Mary Lou's come out of Vicky. And he's, like, he goes down into the basement, and there's a sort of window in the door. And through that window, he could see the stairs leading upward to the first floor. And the door opens and Mary Lou steps in the doorway and you see her in silhouette. But then Mary Lou pops up in front of the window. And it's such a simple misdirect, but it works so well. And it's like, whoa, it's such a good scare.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. The scares are fun in this. I wouldn't necessarily say scary. It's like fun kind of horror.
Yeah.
And so interesting. What is your favorite kind of scene in this movie? If you have one.
That's an interesting question. I love, visually, I love all of the scenes when she slips into that weird dark world. Well, one we haven't talked about yet is she's in gym class and they're playing, what are they playing?
Volleyball.
So like it turns dark and then all the kids like zombies in their gym clothes are like, Mary Lou, Mary Lou. And they like, they back her up and she backs herself up into the volleyball net, but then it turns into a spider web. It's very, very like, surreal. Like all of that stuff works so well for me. And I guess I kind of like the very last scene. It ends on a sort of cliffhanger horror scene where you think they've won, you think they've beat Mary Lou, and Vicky and her boyfriend get in Vicky's boyfriend is the principal's son. So Vicky and the boyfriend get into the dad's car, the principal, and then you realize the principal is Mary Lou is now possessing the principal, and he's like
wearing the ring.
He's wearing the ring, and that essay that I was talking about before makes an interesting point. That's like, isn't this the perfect ending? Now she's controlling his body, and then they drive off, and then the license plate on the car says Mary Lou too. Great. You gotta love a ghost with attention to detail.
Yeah. Did you also think that was another nod to A Nightmare on Elm Street with the car driving off?
Absolutely.
Which, though, again, if you question it, it's like, how did she quickly possess his body? It took her like 2 hours to possess.
Right. And by the way, the same writer wrote part three, and part three is a Mary Lou story. And it's not that. Part three, I was excited to watch three because I like this one. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's another story about Mary Lou. And it sucks so bad. First of all, it tries to be like a straight up like horror comedy, and it's so corny. And in that, like the ghost of Mary Lou can just like go around. So it's like there's no possession involved. The lead character is a boy, and Mary Lou like falls in love with the boy, and the boy and her have ghost sex, and he's he's enamored with her. But then she keeps killing people and the boy has to keep covering up for her. It's a little bit like, I don't know if you've ever seen this movie. It's called My Boyfriend's Back. It's a little bit like that. And but it doesn't mean, I really felt like it changed the character, because in it, she's super possessive of the boy. And it's like, that's not Mary Lou. Mary Lou was never, Mary Lou can give a shit about any particular guy. So yeah. I felt like it kind of ruined her character in a way.
That's disappointing.
Yeah. And then the fourth one is a slasher again.
Oh, okay. So they're just.
Yeah. And then in 2008, they remade the first one. Kinda like it's basically just a slasher about prom night. It's called Prom Night.
Did Jamie Lee Curtis have a cameo in that?
I do not know.
It's funny that like I forget that Jamie Lee Curtis has this whole career as like a horror queen, and it's because she's been in a lot of good movies, but then she keeps doing Halloween movies.
Right, but then she's in Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Well, she was great in that.
She's fantastic in that.
Oh my god. The hot, like, she really made us believe that she had hot dog fingers, right?
Oh, that whole version of the world where like they're in a relationship and she's playing the piano with her feet because they all have hot dog fingers. That's such a good movie if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, quick plug in this it's Prom Night 2 episode. Absolutely, please go see that.
Yeah.
Please go see Prom Night 2. It's so much fun.
It is.
My favorite in Prom Night 2 is when the mother's being a real, you know, calling Vicky a slut and a whore and whatever after she kissed her dad, and then she just flies out the front door.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, you've been waiting for this to happen the whole movie. You're just like, oh, this bitch. Oh, fuck her and her conservative, weird religious shit. And then right. She flies out the window.
Yeah.
Out the door. Fun. And then Mary Lou changes the answering machine message.
That's hilarious.
A question I have about this movie is, like, Mary Lou's been gone for, at this time, 30 years. How does she know how to use computers? And right. How does she know how to change the message on an answering machine?
That's a really good question. But you brought up computers. The one character we haven't really talked about is the nerd character. And that's the kid who is the son of the producer. He's in every Prom Night movie as a different character. Oh. That character's weird because in the beginning, he's like a likable nerd. But then he sexually extorts the bully character. And it's really weird. And he dies for it. And you're kind of like, good. Although I don't know if it's like, maybe that's our contemporary. Maybe in the 80s, you're supposed to be like, yeah, way to go, guy. You got that girl to blow you. But it's like, watching it now, it's like, oh, this was, we were rooting for you before this scene.
Which is weird, because he was like into Vicky's friend, right?
Yeah.
And Vicky, yeah. And so you never see him like, and I guess maybe they don't know that she died, but it's kind of like he tries with her. They have these scenes where they're friends and he tries to ask her out. So like, I don't know, I guess maybe in the 80s, it's like, well, if I can't get this one girl to blow me, I'm going to get this other girl to blow me.
I'll extort someone else to... I'll rig the prom because this girl wants to be the queen so much. It's just it's a weird subplot that's icky. But again, it's a cool death. Mary Lou like electrocutes him through the computer.
Well, that's the thing is like he's in a separate room by himself, right? And he's like typing in, okay, this girl that blew me is going to be the prom. Sorry, Vicky. And then Mary Lou, like, as Vicky looks up, and it's like she senses it somehow. Like, she senses the computer changing in the air and then, like, grabs some electrical wiring and just shocks his face through the computer screen. How does this work?
Yeah. It's best to not think too much about it.
I know. I can't help it, though. It's in my nature. And yeah, it's another death where you're like, oh, he deserves it.
Yeah.
What do you think about all the Catholicism in this movie?
Yeah, I mean, it's all over, right? We have that scene in the beginning when Mary Lou goes to the church. We have the sort of one guy who's like, I guess, a lady killer. He becomes the priest. Even like Vicky's boyfriend gets her a crucifix as a gift in the beginning.
Right, like a necklace, not just like a big wooden cross. It's everywhere, but it's also what my reading from it was is that religion is useless because
right.
Nothing protects you from Mary Lou. There's even that part when the priest and the principal meet and they're like, Mary Lou's back, what are we gonna do? And the priest is like, look, I've been to confession. She can't possess me. I will be saved. But you have to go get,
right.
I don't even remember what he said, like confirmed or something. And then, of course, you know, we don't know if Mary Lou can possess him or not, but she still kills him anyway.
Right. She's right. He does this whole like scene that they completely ripped off from The Exorcist where he's doing the power of Christ. But he's alone. He's just like in the church doing it. And then she comes and kills him.
She shoves a cross in his mouth.
Right.
It's like taking the crucifix that he was holding and using and jammed it into his mouth. That's definitely saying something.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think you also have to think about Vicky's mother is devoutly religious, right? So, and she's presented as a un pleasant character. So I mean, I guess for me, it's like, obviously because it's a prom, it's about school. So I kind of, I put church and school together here as sort of emblematic of the principal and the priest, of like institutional power. That really has no power. It's really bullshit. I mean, that's what I think's funny about, that's where I say, like, if it were a little bit more satirical, because, you know, like, the priest in this movie is not, he's not like the priest in The Exorcist. Like, you get the idea that this priest is a moron and he's stupid and he's wrong about everything. And even the principal, like you said, kind of treats him like an idiot.
Nothing he does is helpful or pointless. He, even before he was a priest, he just didn't help.
Right.
He watched someone die.
Right. And then he becomes a priest because of that, kind of. So it's like he's ineffectual. It kind of says like religion does nothing. Priests do nothing.
That's definitely my take on that. And he's also kind of seen as cowardly in a bit.
Yeah.
From that scene when meeting the principal, he's so scared. Like, he's terrified. And the principal, while he's unnerved, he doesn't kind of grovel in a way that the priest does. And you can, like, kind of see that. Which he's a coward, I guess. We didn't get that much of that. It was just so small.
But he is a coward because what we know about him in the beginning is that he's a lady killer. He, you know, some, the other guy goes, oh, he strikes again. So you get this idea that he's hooking up with all the girls. But after the thing with Mary Lou, seeing her die, where he doesn't help her like a coward, it's like he gives up on women altogether. Like, you get the idea that he's not a priest because he cares about being a priest. He does it because he's like afraid to have sexuality anymore.
Or he also probably thought it could protect him. Like, he thought the cross would protect him from Mary Lou.
Right.
Which
is what makes her so funny, because she mocks it all.
She does. From the scene in the beginning and the confessional. And
then she kills the priest later on in the confessional. She breaks through like the Incredible Hulk.
I know. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I kind of wish there was a little more in that. Just a little, like you said, like a little more satirical kind of things about church, about patriarchy that we can like grab. I feel like what's great about this movie are those elements are there. It's kind of, you just want a little more.
Right. And what sucks is part three has that more comedic tone, but the story and the characters suck. So you wish like the tone of part three was applied to the script of part two. But part three is just like, ugh, it's like part three is just so silly.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing I've been thinking about, because like this is like a revenge story, but also kind of not, because people who are involved are affected, right, by Mary Lou, is I wonder if anyone else at that prom that watched Mary Lou burn to death, were they affected in any way? Because you never see those people again or have any idea. Or because she doesn't go. I mean, it wasn't just the guy with the coat, right? No one did anything. They just watched her burn.
Right. Right. Well, all you know is like she's a local legend. Like, people do say stuff about like, oh, the girl who died at prom. So like she's known in a way. But yeah, it's interesting. That's also, I think, some sort of thematic connective tissue to these movies, because at least of the three that I saw, there's always always something terrible happens. In the first one, the slasher movie, when they're saying king and queen. The queen is Jamie Lee Curtis, but the king is this other kid, and he gets his head chopped off and his head rolls onto the stage and everyone freaks out. And then in this, Mary Lou burns. And then at the end, when Vicky wins, Mary Lou comes out of her. And then in part three, what happens in part three? Something similar. So every one of these movies, I think, has like, when they crown the king and queen, something horrible happens and everyone's forced to watch it.
You would think taking that from Carrie, you think you'd see more carnage.
Right.
Like, I kind of feel like I don't remember anyone else dying in Prom Night 2 except for the bully who, you know, who traded a blowjob for to win the prom. She's accidentally killed when one of the pointy, like, 80s neon lights falls on her, which is not even... I mean, it is involved with, like, but it's not intentionally Mary Lou's targeting her.
No, you're right. Like,
accident.
Yeah, like, it's sort of Carrie-ish, but, like, in Carrie, she locks the doors. Where in this, like, Mary Lou comes out, and it's like, oh, my God, a demon just came out of Vicky's dead body. And everyone kind of just runs out the door. Everyone's like, fuck this, and leaves. And, like, well, that was crazy.
Yeah, you would.
Vicky's alive next Monday at school.
That's it. That's a good point. It's like everyone that saw Vicky be like ripped asunder and thrown aside like a costume.
Right.
She just comes back fully intact. Like,
right. Out of the fucking case. Yeah. It doesn't. It's weird. It's weird that there's one kind of entertaining thing in Prom Night 3 where they're like it's the principal and they're at an assembly and they're like, they're inaugurating some, like, the new auditorium. And he's like, our school's got a weird history. You know, we've all, you know, smelled the smells and heard the ghosts. And, it kind of like makes a joke that, like, the school is totally fucked. And then the principal, like, he cuts the ribbon, but he cuts his own finger off and everyone screams.
How does that work?
I don't know. It's stupid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's
so weird. So what do you think about this as a, like, a franchise overall? Because you've seen, what, 3 out of 4?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really doesn't have legs. I mean, the first one is, one of many Halloween knockoffs. This one, I think, is very good. 3 is just not, it's trying to be funny, but it's not. 3 tries to be, like, it's really trying hard to be, like, Evil Dead and... Like, every one of the, I haven't seen the fourth one, but of the first 3, every one is a couple years apart, and it's like every one is trying to copy what was popular at that time. So it's not a very good franchise, honestly.
Okay, can I just read you the very brief synopsis of Prom Night 4 that I looked up online?
Yeah.
I definitely have not and will not watch this movie.
Sure.
When 4 high school students ditch their prom in favor of a party at a summer house, they do not expect to come across a psychotic priest on the loose determined to punish sinners.
Wow. So it's a, it goes back to Slasher, but again, you got the priest thing.
Yeah, weird. That's very, very weird. Yeah. This is so strange. And you can watch Prom Night 4 on Pluto and Tubi for free, which is, okay, the two streaming services that have really, like, if we said that Shudder can be bottom of the barrel, it's like under the barrel horror movies.
Well, I watched Prom Night 3 on YouTube.com and it's full. When a whole movie is left there and no one ever even tries to take it down, no one gives a shit about the copyright, that's never a good sign.
No,
it's like, yeah, it's fine.
How was the quality? Because on YouTube, it's probably really poor, right?
It was not great, but it's actually better than the version you could find of part 2. Because it's a little later. I think it's 90 or something, 91. Yeah, but it's just a shitty movie.
So when you're talking about quality, it just kind of reminded me, there's a scene where you close up on Vicky's face and you can't even see... I guess maybe because we're used to, like, you know, whatever 4K is or something like that. It's like it's close up of her face, but still you can't see really a lot of detail in her skin.
No.
And it reminded me of, I don't know if you remember this, Mike, but years and years ago, you and me and some other people went to go watch A Nightmare on Elm Street. Bam, it was Bam, okay, right? And they didn't even bother, I don't know if it was even available, but it looked like they just took the VHS and blew it up on a projector.
You know what I think it was? I think it was actually a 35, but it was an uncleaned up 35. It was a 35 that was aging and needed to be preserved.
Okay.
Didn't look great.
No, it reminded me of Mary Lou, of the poor transfer quality. Because you can get really close and then not even see anything.
Yeah.
It was very weird.
Speaking of quality, in that scene where the priest comes to the principal's house to warn him, did you notice the boom mic in that scene?
No. Oh, my goodness. How did I miss that?
Yeah. And then there's another boom mic in part three. And I'm like, okay, there's a theme there's a motif that keeps coming back, the boom mic.
Which is it a intentional?
No, it's just shitty. It's just terrible movie making. By the way, there's a movie. Oh, fuck. What is it called? There's a movie with John Cryer from Pretty in Pink and 2.5 Men where it's like he works for the mob and then like the mob is after him and he's on the run. So, of course, he goes to high school to hide out and falls in love with a high school girl. And that's totally acceptable because it was the 80s.
Oh, God.
I'm trying to find the movie because I want you to watch the trailer. Everyone listening, watch the trailer. It's the only time I've ever seen a boom mic in a trailer. And it's like, how did they let that in the trailer? What is this terrible movie called?
Okay. I think it's Hiding Out.
Yes. Hiding Out. Watch the trailer. There's a boom mic in the trailer.
You can watch Hiding Out on YouTube for $3.99.
That is $3.98 more than it should be. Actually, I've not seen the movie. I've only seen the trailer. But when you get a boom mic in a trailer, that's usually not a good sign.
No, no. Oh my goodness. 1987, Hiding Out. Oh, that's bad.
John Cryer. John Cryer vehicle. Well, I think we did it. Everyone watch Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2. We haven't said, by the way, the title is a reference to a song by Ricky Nelson.
He is in the movie.
Right. From 1971, Hello Mary Lou. You know what? Another thing I want to give credit to the movie. They spent money on the music. They got Little Richard, Tutti Frutti. Whereas, like, it easily could have been, like, just shitty, fake 50s music. There's, like, real songs in the movie, at least. So they shelled out the money for that.
Yeah. It seems here, according to Google, that Tutti Frutti came out in 1957 when prom was taking place. So they got
a hot new song.
Hot new song on at prom is pretty impressive.
Yeah, she's getting fingered to it. So that's exciting.
I'm sure she wasn't the first.
All right. So this has been PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Nadia Cater. Nadia, thank you so much for being here and talking about Prom Night 2.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you for inviting me.
We come out every Wednesday. You can find us anywhere pods are found. You could also find us at PCMC Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Also find us on YouTube now and Facebook. We're all over the interwebs. We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.
See you later, alligator. That's Mary Lou's catchphrase. See you later, alligator.